You're listening to Searching for More, a podcast of the Diocese of Arlington. He spent 8 years living among some of the poorest people in the world and not knowing their language. How Father Patrick Posey, traveling by mule, was able to vaccinate hundreds of villagers. This episode is hosted by Billy Atwell, Chief Communications Officer for the Diocese.
Father Posey, thank you for joining me on the podcast.
Well, Billy, thank you for having me here.
So before we get into this story, and you've got an interesting story with your work in missions, especially in Bonica. First, talk a little bit about your pastoral life, some of your pastoral assignments here in the diocese, and how you got involved in mission work.
My first priest assignment was the Sacred Heart in Winchester. I was there for 4 years. And then at the end of 4 years, on your first assignment, you're called by the Episcopal Vicar for Clergy and told the bishop would like you to go to such and such a parish. I knew something was up because I got a call from then Bishop Keating's assistant asking that the bishop would like to see me directly and soon. So I went to see the bishop, and he looked and said, well, where do you think I'm going to assign you? And I remember saying, well, I was in Spotsylvania, Bishop, and I was in the Sacred Heart in Winchester for my first assignment. I guess it'll be somewhere in the Beltway. And he looked at me and said, well, I'm sending you to Bonica. And I don't speak Spanish. I was really unaware of the mission. And so for a split second, I was thinking, okay, there's Burke, Chantilly. And then it dawned on me. It's a true story. And I said, Bishop, you're talking about our mission in the Dominican Republic. Yes, I don't speak Spanish, to which the bishop replied, you soon will. And from there, I went to Mexico for 6 weeks and then off to the missions. And that's how my career began in Bonica and my love of Bonica over now 26 years.
So what kept you involved and engaged in the mission work there? Obviously, you have an assignment there, but you've obviously continued to have a passion for mission work. And I know you're involved with you're the director of the Arlington Diocese Mission Office and the Arlington Diocese. You're the director of the Pontifical Mission Societies for the Diocese. Talk about what those two organizations do and why you've continued to be involved in them.
Yes, Billy, when I came back from the missions in 2005, I was assigned to St. Francis de Sales in Percival. 3 years later, I was assigned as pastor to St. James in Falls Church. And at the same time, the bishop asked if I would take over the responsibilities for the mission office and also work with the Pontifical Mission Societies. And the mission office, we oversee the work in the Dominican Republic. We have two mission parishes, one in the town of Bonica, St. Francis Parish, and the other in Pedro Santana, which is St. Joseph Parish. Between the two of them, there are 58 communities that we are responsible for. And so I help fundraise. We've built a school. We've built a computer lab. We're in the process of building some roads up into the mountains. It's a very rural. We're right on the Haitian border. When I arrived there, for example, I arrived at night. It was complete darkness. Because I discovered electricity comes on about 2 to 3 hours a day, and it could go off up to 2 weeks at a time. And so I happened to arrive when it was in complete blackness. And I remember it took 5 hours from the airport to get to Bonica. I still knew pretty much see and know, and a few other words to be able to offer the Mass. And I was just hot. It was an old Jeep. Literally, the door was tied by a rope because it's just what we had at the time. And I was the last 45 minutes of the journey was potholed dirt roads. I was exhausted, tired, encrusted in dust. And I just remember saying, okay, let me just have a nice warm shower and I'll figure this out in the morning. That's when I discovered there's no running water. Wow. The person that brought me to the town gave me a flashlight, pointed to a path and said, if you follow that path down, you'll get to your shower, which was the river. There's no phone, there's no TV, and unlike here in Northern Virginia, where people come to the parish, our responsibility is to go out to the villages, the campos, and as I said, there's 58 of them. And so,
how big would one of those communities be? So there's 58 of them. Do they range in size? Are they all pretty similar in size?
They are all different. You could have a community of 8. You can have a community of 50 homes. There's 16,000 people that we're responsible for between the two mission parishes that we oversee. So my office, under the office, the mission office for the diocese, works with the two priests that are currently down there. We have Father Stephen McGraw and Father Jason Weber, and they're in charge of the two parishes. And there's a lot of work that we do. 90% of the people up in the mountains, they're subsistence farmers, and they're also illiterate. And so if you think that how do we have a liturgy service every week in 58 communities spread all over the mountains along the Haitian and Dominican border, with a community that literally if they read, they'll read one word very, very slowly. It takes them a long time to get through just a sentence, let alone a whole gospel reading. And so we work with the people in literacy programs. We bring the people down from the mountains. I mean, we're talking about 6-7 hour walk to get down into what we call El Centro, the center of the it's basically a dormitory and a kitchen and where people can come down from the mountains. And we teach them to read. And the purpose of that is at the end, they're able to go back up into the community and be the one that does the liturgy of the word celebration when we can't get to them. One of my favorite stories is it was a 56-year-old woman who had attended this course, coming hours down the mountain one weekend a month for a little over a year. And we had a graduation ceremony. There's about 200 people that were at the ceremony. A secular card is their ID card. We don't really have equivalents like a Social Security, but for them, they have to have it for everything. And it's who they are. And most of the people in our communities have three X's and a thumbprint as their signature. So this lady was so proud to hold up her old secular card with the three X's in her fingerprint and the new secular card. By the way, it took 5 hours to get to the Capitol. She had to go three separate times because you get there and they close for the day unannounced. You go back and there's some other excuse. You go back and so coming down the mountain, hours on foot, making a five-hour journey in a packed público, they call it, the public bus, waiting in a long line three separate times. She was so proud to hold up her new secular card that simply had her signature.
Wow.
That's the kind of the work that that we do. We build latrines, believe it or not. When Father Jerry Creedon arrived in 1991, when we opened the mission, there were no latrines. People literally go to the river. They go to the river to bathe. They went to the river to wash their clothes. Their animals went to the river to get their water. They went to the river to get their water. But they also went to the river and on the side of the hill. That's where they did their business.
Right.
In the rainy season, just imagine their trash was – they threw it in an open pit. And normally it was along the river. And so the church not only is bringing the sacraments, my first baptism was 108 being baptized at one Mass. And so we certainly are baptizing. We certainly are offering the Mass and preparing the people for an encounter with the Lord. But if they're starving or they're sick or simple things like, you know, if you put your trash dump next to the river or if you take care of your personal hygiene next to the river. And so the latrines, we did vaccinations. I would go up into the mountains because I would drive an hour in that famous Jeep that I'd get on my mule. And Francisca, my mule, and I would go 5 hours up to Layamaya, which was the first community. From there, Sarasita would be a six-hour journey. Sometimes the local medical personnel didn't want to do that journey. And so one of my stories is I went and vaccinated the kids up in the mountains. But I learned a good lesson because I would go maybe every 3 months to that particular village. So 3 months later, I arrive, I get out my mask kit, which is my backpack, and all the kids start crying. And I realized, because the last time I was here, the needles and the medicine were in that backpack. That's all the kids remembered, evidently, was the I would give them needles.
Yeah.
But this is the work that we do. We help repair homes. A lot of our villagers still live in dirt huts, a dirt floor. They cook on an open fire. And, you know, there were no chapels in these small remote villages. And over the years, 26 years now, the Diocese of Arlington has sponsored those two mission parishes. We have chapels in all the villages. We have latrines. We have health projects. But we also have the gospel being read, the children being prepared and taught for First Communion and confirmation. And it's a wonderful work. My office simply oversees the many groups that go down. We've had all of our high schools have gone down there. Marymount College University has gone down there. George Mason University has gone down there. The U.S. Coast Guard has gone down there. We've been blessed with just many of our parishes have sent youth groups and adults down into the missions. They paint. They help dig latrines. They help change that dirt floor into a cement floor. They help with our school. And particularly, you know, some will go down there, especially in the summer, for extended lengths of time, and they help with the teaching English to our kids. Primarily, the capital is where all the jobs are, in Santo Domingo, and the good jobs are all of the Zona Francas, which are the factories, and they're European and from the United States. They're all the main brands that everybody would be familiar with. So to have a background in English puts those applicants on the top of the list. And so, again, you know, we're teaching the faith, but we're also preparing the whole person. That's what I love about our Catholic school system. You know, it's the whole, mind, body, and soul. And we do the same in the missions. You know, we help them encounter Christ and also to be able to put bread on their table and to take care of their children.
Every time I talk to someone who's been on a mission, that, especially like a Christian or a Catholic mission, they always emphasize how faithful the people are. And I think for us that's hard to imagine sometimes, because we imagine if we were in such squalor, we would start wondering, you know, is God really there? You know, is he really taking care of us? And these people are living in very tough conditions. They don't have basic medical care. So they have very hard lives, especially as subsistence farmers. It's a tough life. It's a tough life for a regular farmer in America, let alone someone in Bonica or a place like that. Describe the spiritual life of the people there and how they deal with the struggles of life and the things that they go through, because you've talked about kind of the physical, you know, strugglings that they have and practical. But what impact does that have on their spiritual life?
Yeah, I can tell you the one story where I went to the community. It was like watching, if you've ever seen the movie The Mission, you know, the group comes through the hills and over the waterfalls. And as they're coming in, you can hear the beautiful singing. And I thought of that as I went to one of the remote villages. And sure enough, as you come in, you hear this beautiful singing. The people have come an hour and a half on foot for the mass that's going to be once every 3 months. They come because they realize that before the priest gets there, the catechist will be helping their children to prepare for the sacraments, of their parents to prepare for baptism. I always were amazed that, you know, an hour and a half plus to come over a mountain. These are not the paved roads. These are mountain mule paths that people come to. I'm going to give you just one example of the faith of the people, Porfilio. Porfilio was one of the, we call him an animador, a community leader. His responsibility would be in the local community, the campo, to oversee that the Liturgy of the Word would be celebrated, that the catechesis are being given to the children. Oversee if we had a project, like we built 21 miles of roads as a diocese up into the mountains, the latrines, we put aqueducts in. So that person would be working with the local representatives. Porfirio came down with cancer. And basically in the Dominican Republic, if you don't have a lot of money, there's not a lot to offer. Porfirio eventually went blind because the cancer was literally growing out of his eye socket. There's nothing we could do because basically it was beyond – the government has limited resources. So we could give him Tylenol 3, and that was it, and which probably was not much to help the pain. I was asked to see Porfirio. I sent somebody to come get me, and I went, and there he was, obviously dying. The stench of in his small house, if you want to call it that, but he had this dirty rag around his head, and he immediately called for one of the ladies in the community, and presented me the lady. And he said, "Father, this is the one that's going to take over for me. This is the one that will make sure that the Liturgy of the Word is still celebrated and the kids are prepared." I can't imagine the pain he must have been in. And when I get a headache, I'm almost like done for the day, let alone thinking about what we call los demás, the others. That's the faith of the people. Mara just passed away. Mara was, I think she's 5'5", being generous. Before 1991, we had not had a priest in our mission parishes for over 20 years. And it was difficult to find a resident priest there. And we had no phone, no ready water, no creature comforts. It was hard to find somebody to go there. That's how we actually got there. Pope John Paul II, now St. John Paul II, asked the bishops of the world to remember that we are missionaries, ad gentes, the Vatican II document. I think it's number 2. It reminds everybody that the church is missionary by its very nature. And asked that the bishops send missionaries, that we are still called to go forth to the ends of the earth and proclaim the gospel. Even when, as far as to remind us that even in places where there are few priests, the bishops still should send missionaries. That's how important, right from Christ, 2 by 2, and go out and proclaim the gospel. So it's Mara was going back is one of those who, during those 20 years, who opened the church that was falling down and would lead the rosary every day with the cadre of people that would gather. And I mentioned that we're right on the Haitian border, and there are times some unrest. It's a lot of political history, and memories are long. And so every once in a while there'll be some issues between Dominicans and Haitians. But in this particular case, there was an issue in Haiti, and there was a coup. And some of the people that bordered our parish ran and sought asylum in the church. And Mara, with a rosary in her hand, stood at the front of the church when the Dominicans didn't want Haitian refugees in their church, so they allowed the military to come in, the Haitian military, to extract the people that were seeking asylum. Mara and a group of ladies with rosaries in hand were at the door of the church, and this small in stature, strong woman looked at the military with guns and said, "If you're here to pray, you're more than welcome, but if you're not, we're not going to let you in."
Wow.
And they turned around. So, you know, you asked about the spirituality of the people and the sacrifices of the people. One other story, and you know, you mentioned the difference of our life and their life. We would get, and we still do have high school groups that go down, and I would take them to one of these villages, and we'd celebrate Mass, and we'd distribute candy. It's amazing. The menta is a mint. It's a square little inexpensive piece of candy. And I remember the first time I gave these mints out, you know, the kid would take one, and then two or three people would run away. And I'm like, well, I'm ready to give the others. But they're so used to having so little that they ran away because the one that received it would break it in two or into threes and give it to their friends. We would go and visit, and then at the end, we'd come back, and I would say, so please tell me your experiences. And usually, some of the people would start crying. And I would say to them, why are you crying? Well, we went to this village, and all these kids, and a piece of candy, and they're running away, and they're breaking it in two, and they have dirt floors, and they cook on an open fire, and they're the kid. I said, but what are the kids doing? Well, they're running up to us, and they're grabbing our hands, and they're saying, come see our hut. You know, they take them in the dirt hut, and they some just have hammocks. You know, there's no limited space, and they'll show them their hammock and where they sleep, and they want to take them to the river where they go and play. And I said, but what do they have? Smiles. They're happy. I think there's something about the simplicity of their life that brings them peace and joy. And then I say to the people that are crying, I said, you're blessed with a lot, which is good. But you're sad. They don't have a lot. But what they do is they have their families. They have a reality that each needs to help the other, whether it's a piece of candy or with a toy or whatever. And there's a joy. And I think that's why it's important to have these exchange between the people coming from the diocese going down to the mission. Over the years, we've had some of the mission staff, those who help us come up here, especially on our 25th anniversary. It's important that we see each other as people, human beings, and learn from each other. When I went down there, unfortunately, thinking, well, okay, my language is limited, but I'm from the United States. I'm from the first world. So what gifts can I bring and help these people? I think the greatest thing that ever happened to me was going without the language. It forced the people to work with me and me with them.
And you're teaching each other, yeah.
Exactly. And to realize that I was impressed when the kid broke the piece of candy and shared it. I'm impressed that, one of the Haitian gentlemen that lives in our parish came to me, and we had a medical group down there, and the doctors from the States wanted to amputate just part of the foot. The guy had diabetes, and the Dominican doctors, surgeons said, no, we need to amputate the whole foot. And so the guy came to me and said, Father, Padre, you care of Saber, I want to know, what do you want me to do? And I'm sitting there. At that time, I was 32 years old, and this guy is coming to me in his 60s asking me, should I amputate part of my foot or the whole foot? This is a good lesson for me, and it's because I went with the U.S. doctors, because probably my prejudice that obviously they must know more. They didn't. The Dominican doctors were right, because he was a farmer, and so he would be always in the dirt, and sure enough, his foot kept getting infected. And he had to come back and have the surgery that the original Dominican doctors, because they knew the whole reality. And really, I see my job in the mission office is to help people see the world and the reality of the world. And I do that through visiting. And thanks be to God, both Bishop Liberty and now Bishop Burbage has been very supportive of the mission work, of our own diocesan mission, but missions in general. Very supportive of the trips that I take to visit our different missions that we support throughout the world. And so I can come back and through our Arlington Herald tell the story. When I go and do mission appeals in the summer, I tell the story of, I was in India and I visited the beautiful sisters all over the world that do fantastic work. And this sister was taking care of a young boy, probably about 14, who had pins all through his leg. He just had surgery. The Hindus who lived in the area, this was a Christian family, were taking care of him, which was good. But where the kid was between two homes in an alleyway where there's a blue tarp over and everything exposed. That's where we went to minister to the family. The kid was just on a simple cot. The sister was making sure, she was a nurse, making sure the bandage was changed and all. Now, that particular culture, believe it or not, that whole area that was a different religion was actually being extremely supportive because the culture would be that would be separated. You wouldn't intermix, so to speak. Mm. And so the people were doing what they could to be kind to the other. The sister was doing what she could by using her gifts. And I asked, how long has he been here under this tarp in between the two homes? For 8 weeks. Wow. Because they came from a remote area of their community. And this was the closest they could be. How do you tell that story? How do you, part of my other job besides the mission work is I'm the director of the Pontifical Mission Societies. And that's the propagation of faith. It's the Missionary Childhood Association. Propagation of faith is to remind people that by our baptism, we're all missionaries. We're all supposed to be proclaiming the gospel. And John Paul II also remind us that we're not only disciples in missionaries, but we're missionary disciples. I like that term that he used. And that, in fact, I think it was in his first writing that he sent out, The Joy of the Gospel, that we're called to bring the love and compassion to others. And he particularly reminded us that a missionary, yes, is in your home, in your workplace, but it's also in the world. And I get the great joy not only being a pastor and ministering to the gospel and the people in my parish, and I also get the great joy of the universal church, that we are one family in mission.
What do you miss most about the mission? So you were living that simple life as well. There weren't all these other distractions. Is that what you miss most, or is there something else that when you look back that you say, okay, that I really gained a lot from that?
Billy, I think what I miss most is that literally, in at least Latin America, the church is built in the center of the town. And you have the park, you have all the government offices, and everything is in the center. Because in the Dominican Republic, by its constitution, it's Catholic. Hmm. The church was supposed to be the center of everybody's life. And so as a result, everything happens around the church. Everything is integrated. If there's even a civil event, the priest sits with the community leaders. There's a function going on, a celebration of a wedding or whatever. The priest would be involved. They're part of the family, and they're expected to be there. They're expected to go out. Every community has their own feast day, their own celebration, and the priest is expected to be a part of that. And I think in the United States, the priests are certainly respected. But again, it goes back to the concept where people come to the physical church. And it's not that sense of if there's activities outside of the building, you don't think of necessarily the priest. I like the interwovenness of their spiritual life and their everyday life. For example, if I'm going somewhere and I'm on a trip, the people say, vayan con Dios, travel with God. If I said, hey, Bill, let's get together tomorrow and see Dios Cary, if God wills. I like the fact that God is included in their normal conversation, and they're proud of their faith. You know, they proudly wear their rosaries. You know, they probably, the Holy Father just spoke of recently that, you know, the rosary is not an ornament, not a piece of jewelry. And
right.
And for the people down there, they understand the rosary represents their faith, represents their devotion to Mary, that they have a tremendous devotion to. They celebrate on January 21st, Nuestra Señora de Alta Gracia, which is their patron. My first time celebrating that was special because I heard that the following day, on the 21st of January, there'd be no school, all the government offices would be closed. And I thought, well, this is nice because it's my birthday, January 21st. And they told me it was the feast, the patroness of their country's feast day. And that's why everything was closed.
Well, this is a fascinating story. I mean, your experiences there obviously had a profound impact on you and your priesthood, and you brought that back. And now we've got other missionary priests there serving in these communities. I was wondering if there's any last thoughts you had for those who are listening about the work of missions, or maybe, you know, for those who are interested in serving in a mission, what would you recommend that they do to get involved in some way?
Yeah, Billy, the other day I was at a parish with a mission talk, and then I talked about what I talked here, some of the reality of especially the poverty. The gentleman came up to me and said, Father, you know, I've given to the mission, but I want to let you know that I've never seen anything that you described, and I've been going to the Dominican Republic for 20 years. And I just looked at him and I said, Casa de Campo, Punta Plata, the resorts. And in this case, it was Casa de Campo, which has its own private airport. It's a walled community. And I said, have you ever in those 20 years just walked out and gone a couple blocks? No. And I said, if you do, I think you'd probably see or hear my homily in a different way. Mm. I think the responsibility I have in working in the missions is to gently remind the people of the whole world, and that we need to be aware of the reality. Because if we're aware of it, we'd want to help. We want to get involved. So when groups go down and they see a dirt floor and they'll ask one of the pastors down there, what can we do? Well, you know, with a little bit of support, we can put a cement floor in there. So at least the kids aren't walking barefoot through dirt. You know, we can maybe build a home if it's still a thatched roof. A lot of the homes still are, they cut down a tree and they intertwine the branches and they fill it in with dirt. And they had thatched roofs. And over the years, we've been able to build a cement home, and it's better and for them. If you're a teacher, and you know, maybe in the summer, and say, you know, I can give some time. My kids are off, you know, with their own families now, and maybe I can go down and offer to teach English, you know, for the students down there. There's so many, Billy, you can throw a dart. There's so many things you can do. I talk about a computer lab. Well, it's hard to have a computer lab if your electricity is Spartan, and it's not consistent. When I went down there, I had the only laptop computer when I arrived in 1995, and I couldn't get it to charge because the 110 is the normal currency, and it was coming in at 60.
Wow.
And a friend of mine said it has to be above 100 before you can even charge a battery. So a parishioner heard that and knew an electrician and paid for that electrician to go down and multiple trips and was able to put in a generator and have it stable enough to run computers so the kids could learn. So another skill that, because they don't have computers in their public school in Bonica even today. So I would say, you know, we're all brothers and sisters. And if we discover each other, we'll see that we are one family in mission. I always think it's sad that when there's tragedies in the world, whether it's a hurricane or issues that happen, like 9/11, for example, it's sad with the tragedy. But to me, it's also sad. It's sort of a mixed blessing. People come out. You know, they open their homes. They open restaurants for the first responders. They'll wait 7 hours in line to give blood. And they all come together and they meet the need. And I often think to myself, and I try to remind people, myself first, and in my homilies as a missionary priest, is that wouldn't it be great if we did that all the time? Mm-hmm. And that I think truly the world would be a better place, a more peaceful place. We'd really be living out to be a missionary disciple.
So for those that want to learn more about the mission, you can obviously go to the diocesan website, arlingtondiocese.org. We've got links there to the mission work that's being done and to learn more about Bonica. Father, you all have a partner agency. So if someone's saying, I want to go on a mission, you have a partner agency that you all work with that can actually help them with that. What's the name of that group?
Yeah, Commissioned by Christ is actually sponsored by the Diocese of Arlington. They do many different mission excursions, and they're open to any groups. We have a lot of we have 22 parishes in our diocese that have active mission help and support, and literally all over the world. But a lot of these parishes, they're very limited number that can go, and so it's mostly parish-centered, and it's fantastic that they do that. Commissioned by Christ is open to everyone. So that would be a wonderful place to start. And what I like about that is it's like the whole person I talked about earlier. It's not – you just don't sign up for a date. I'm going to go to Bonica on the third weekend of September for 5 days. You sign up for formation. You sign up to – we're going to meet a couple times and talk about why are we doing this? What's the purpose of this? Is it just to go and paint a house, or is it to see the other? What's the reality of the country you're going to go visit? How do you interact with the people? And so to remind them, keep your eyes open. Don't go down there we're going to go and save them. Go and see how you can save each other and learn from each other. And then you actually go on the trip, and then there's a follow-through on it. And I love that approach as opposed to maybe just doing a quick week down and dig a hole, and that, which is important and needed. But I like that holistic approach of mind, body, and soul.
Wonderful. Well, I know the time of our priests, especially our pastors, is a precious commodity. So I appreciate you coming on and giving your time and telling this story for those who are listening. If you would conclude with a short prayer and blessing for us.
Sure. In the name of the Father, and the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Heavenly Father, help us to be truly missionary disciples. Disciples, one that is enamored, enthralled, loved with the Lord. But the Lord sent us out two by two. Help us in our home, in our workplace, and the civic organizations that we belong to, and yes, in the faraway mission lands, to take that love that we personally have encountered and personally are benefited from to the others. And that's what a missionary is. Help us, Lord, to be missionary disciples in your name. We ask this through Christ our Lord. Amen.
Thank you for listening to Searching for More. If you enjoyed this podcast, please write a review on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher. Also, make sure you follow the Diocese and the Arlington Catholic Herald on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channels for regular videos that will inspire, educate, and inform you about the Catholic faith and our diocesan community.